within. The man God, IHS, comes up from my gut. He's a creation of my gut. Jesus, the man God, a creation of my gut.
God is composed of my within desire plus outside event.
Outside phenomena. It's my gut, my insides, projecting onto the phenomena what I feel and experience and need. Right? That's all. All that comes from outside is a dance of phenomena. Yes?
1 John 4:7 says that Jesus Christ reveals man to man.
Yeah.
And that means what?
Jesus Christ reveals man to man. This particular man, you must read the next letter coming from this, because the CC No articles explain that perfectly, absolutely perfectly. Jesus was such a perfect man that in him we see the fullness of what man can be and should be. Therefore, Jesus reveals to us the fullness of humanity. And Ratzinger, in 1968, was teaching in a book called The Introduction to Christianity. Ratzinger wrote and taught that because Jesus is such a perfect man, he is God. Because he is the perfection, fullness, and completeness of man, he is God. That's Ratzinger in 1968, and nothing indicates that he's taken it back ever since. And he's now the prefect of the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith.
And Urshom Paul, that's not what did he say. He says, if one soul is lost in hell, then the Holy Trinity wouldn't be happy.
Hell exists, but it's empty, says Balthasar. Oh, sure he is. Pretty sure he is. That's correct.
So is Judas in hell? Do we have to prove that Judas?
Balthasar would say, all sane theologians say that we know at least that Judas and Cain are in hell. But Balthasar, we don't even know that.
No, Balthasar says not even that.
Yeah,
that's
it.
Who's Balthasar?
Another of these modern theologians. He was Swiss.
A priest?
Yes, he was a priest, yes.
He was the best friend of the Pope, this one.
Yeah.
He made him a cardinal.
Yeah.
And he died 2 days before.
That's it.
Judas and Cain didn't damage him with these martyrs and going to take to the body of the Lord.
One might think.
One might know.
Sorry, Ruben?
One might know.
Okay, let's go on. Religion is a form of human life. Therefore, religion comes from man's life within. And there you've got the principle of vital immanence. Therefore, religion comes from the needs of man's heart. Blasphemy. Horrible blasphemy. Religion comes from the needs of man's heart. The whole of religion is my gut throwing something onto the phenomena which isn't in the phenomena, but it's from me. Yes?
If man is the creator of God, is the creator of man.
Evolution. They don't talk about a creator of man. You don't need a creator of man. Man is there.
But that's scientifically impossible.
Evolution. Evolution is a bunch of baloney. I was saying the other day, but that's what they will believe. If you ask them that question, that's what they will believe. Yeah. Now, all man's religion comes from the sense of the heart and from his needs. Therefore, religion comes from the needs of man's heart. The heart. Do you feel? And of course, you get into the feely-feely religion. And you get into the feely-feely sessions, which some of the boys and some of the girls absolutely love. It's all logical. Notice how logical it is. If you destroy the truth, you're left with that. If you bring it all down to matter of the senses, then of course you just let rip with sensuality. You're just inviting sensuality to take over, which is what it does. Therefore, faith, notice, faith in inverted commas, we're going to, because the word, what the modernists are going to do, they're going to say what this word really means. Then faith, as they take it, really means an inner sense coming from the need of the divine in the subconsciousness. So faith is, where does faith come from? It certainly doesn't come from there. Faith in God comes from here. Faith is this inner sense coming up from my subconscious and projecting on the phenomena what I need according to my inner needs. Therefore, faith is this is faith. These arrows, like, coming up from my needs until, boom, it sort of produces fireworks in my head. Excited by the unknowable beyond the phenomena, this sense produces the God that it believes in. You see, excited, here are the phenomena, here is the unknowable, but my entrails are excited in some way by these phenomena. These phenomena have a trick of exciting my entrails. My entrails get into movement, and then they throw up God. That's the faith producing the God that it believes in. Therefore, faith is an inner sense projecting onto the phenomena what will then be the object of my belief. But in this sense, here God is manifested or revealed. We've got God is being revealed here. This mechanism coming up from my entrails, my gut, reveals God. Therefore, revelation, we've got a new explanation of the word revelation. Revelation, in this sense, God is manifested or revealed. Therefore, revelation is this inside manifestation of God. So faith is inside me, revelation is inside me, or immanent, it's all inside me, revelation is inside. No question of the Lord God coming down into the womb of the Virgin Mary, taking flesh, growing to the age of 30 or 31, 32, teaching men and revealing God, no question of all of that. Because that's all ultra phenomena. I don't know that. I have got no right to know that. That's all beyond the phenomena. What happened was, there was this particular individual who was provided somehow a specially interesting dance of phenomena, and that provoked my inner needs and life to reveal inside me that this is God. And therefore, my entrails threw up God, and I believed in God. And I believe that this is God. Therefore, revelation is the inner sense of God revealing himself to the soul. Therefore, consciousness is revelation. Therefore, natural consciousness is supernatural revelation. Therefore, supernatural revelation is the natural consciousness. Therefore, supernatural and natural are the same thing. There's no difference between supernatural and natural. Attracted by the unknowable fabricated, he's got a theme instead of a secret. Attracted by the unknowable beyond. You see, this is unknowable. But there's something particularly attractive about this unknowable. This unknowable has got a halo, and it's got a halo. There's something attractive about this unknowable, and that's what sets my entrails moving and producing in me the sense of God. Attracted by the unknowable beyond, this faith transfigures and disfigures the phenomena. How does it transfigure the phenomena? Because it takes a mere bunch of phenomena and turns those phenomena into the God-man. It's my faith that has transformed the phenomena into the God-man. The phenomena are simply phenomena, no more. I know nothing more about them, and I have no right to know anything more about them. But these phenomena have set me vibrating. The vibration has thrown up as revealed God inside me. I believe in God, and then I project God onto the phenomena. So I then say, I throw God onto the
phenomena.
So can he do it with Mohammed and with Buddha and all that too?
Yes. A Mohammedan, if a Mohammedan says it was to say the Mohammed was God, he's absolutely right. He's got the right to it. Therefore, between modernism and ecumenism, what have you got between modernism and ecumenism? A big bleeding red heart.
It seems like ecumenism is a logical octave of monastery. It couldn't go any other way.
Absolutely.
Possible for it to go
absolutely.
Any other.
One world religion.
This synchronizes all religions. All religions become equally legitimate.
Right.
Right.
And
it
all goes back to the principle.
It goes back to the camp principle. What country is camp from, does it? Reuben.
Money in religion. I mean, money. There's big bucks in religion. Already, everybody would have been going to one town or one place and worship. But by stopping people from becoming all uniting and really, really getting on the big bucks, because Brother Armand and Brother Porkchop, they want their money. And nobody does. So long as Mighty George is in the middle, they ain't going to be. They're not going to come together.
I see. What you're saying is that all the religions make money in their own place. Right.
What a shaft.
More
than
shoes
company right now.
Right. Yep, it's true. Well, money plays its part as well. So revelation is completely changed. Then also the supernatural. Since all inside here is nature, and since revelation is meant to be supernatural, and since revelation is natural, then the supernatural is natural. So we take the word supernatural, and that's going to require a completely different meaning. We'll keep the ticket, we'll keep the word, we'll keep the bottle, but we're going to empty it out and change its content. We're going to put into the bottle, labeled supernatural, we're going to put a completely natural content. So the supernatural. Everything is purely natural. My God. Out of my gut. Religion is supernatural. My gut is natural. Therefore, the supernatural seems logical. So, supernatural changes this. Lastly, dogma. Therefore, all religions come to be and all supernature emanated or issued from paragraph 10. Now, the sense. Remember, the phenomena have set me vibrating. My sense, my religious sense, which is my need, my vital need, my living need, throws up God. And then I believe in the God that is revealed to me from my inner sense. Now, when the inner sense has thrown up God, how do I express that? I express that, firstly, by, ooh, when the phenomena of the Nazarene. The Nazarene phenomena make me go, ooh. Then, a little later, the Nazarene phenomena, stop your ears, this is so horrific. The Nazarene phenomena make me go, God. Then, a little later, again, the mind begins to think a little, and God. And then I say, you know, the Nazarene is God. The Nazarene is God. The Nazarene is God. The Nazarene is God. Then a little later, you know, the mind is getting to work on this feeling coming up. And then a little later, the mind says, true God, a true God, true man, a true man, true God, a true God. And that's how you get the Nicene Creed. And then a little later, true God of man, and man, God of God, man of light. God of God, light of light, true God of true God.
And then I
just write the whole creed, consubstantial. Oh man, consubstantial. You know, it's Nicene Creed got written. That's what he's saying. So you see, the dogmas that we sing, it's all just a highly polished and refined and developed product of my And what follows from that? That if no longer expresses my then what's going to happen to it goes out the window. In other words, dogmas block your ears, dear Catholic friends. Block your ears. Dogmas are simply the passing, temporary, transient product of my particular need at that particular moment of an expression of what was coming up from my religious sense inside me. Therefore, of course, there are no dogmas. There's no such thing as dogma. Is simply a passing, useful for that moment expression of what I, anybody,
feel.
That's it. And when my feelings change, the dogmas are better changed, because a dogma of yesterday, which no longer corresponds to my feeling, is no longer any use. So bye-bye yesterday's dogmas. Look at this. The mind, firstly, expresses this sense in primitive formulae. God! And then it works these up into God of God, light of light, true God of true God. It's more complicated than just God. But it's all the same, basically. Therefore, dogmas are secondary. As to the object, they're merely inadequate symbols, because no words can express my beautiful feelings. So they're an inadequate expression, firstly. And as to the subject, they're mere instruments. I mean, if I say, you know, Jesus Christ is God, that's simply something to help me to get hold, to express, to utter my marvelous feelings. Right? It's too utterly. It reminds one of Patience of Gilbert and Sullivan. it's all utterly transcendental, you know. As to me, for my purpose, as for the thing, no dogma is sufficient to express it. And as for my wonderful and beautiful feelings, the moment my feelings changed, the dogmas have changed. Therefore, dogmas must adapt to the sense, which after all makes the truth, and they must adapt to the believer using them. And so if we've got 20th century believers who no longer find it possible to believe in dum-dum-dum-dum-dum, all of those dum-dum-dum dogmas had better go, because they're no longer expressing what's in me. What do I believe in? I believe in 747, going down to the airport. And rock and roll. You see, because if the dogmas no longer correspond to what I feel, then the dogmas are no longer vital. The dogmas are no longer living. And if the dogmas aren't living, then they're no use. So, trash can. Therefore, dogmas must evolve. And if they don't evolve, it's proof that they are dead. Dead and wrong, yeah?
So that's how they classify previous dogmas that said, from here and forever, this must be believed?
That's simply when the 19th century said, or the 18th century, or the 17th century said, this dogma must always be believed, that was simply the 19th century projecting its wonderful feelings. This is so true, it must always be believed. You get it?
Yeah, but how can you pass down your faith, if you have a faith like that, how can you pass down your faith to your kids if you keep it changing all the time?
Kids. This is what's going to make you vibrate. Vibrate with me. Let's vibrate together. 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, rock. Right? Yeah. Do you follow?
I know.
Logic say that's what it is. We'll come to what the church is on this system. You can play mental games already trying to work out what's the church, what are they going to make of the church? What are they going to make of scripture? What are they going to make of tradition? If you want to look ahead and see what they do with it, but just imagine right now what they do with it. What do you think the church is, for instance? What is the church of believers?
Theater.
It's theater, yes. It's a great big party. It's a Friday evening bash of a whole lot of people getting together and sharing their vibrations. And no wonder you get the strobe lights into church, and no wonder church turns into, you know. You have to laugh a little, not to cry. It's infinitely great. It is infinitely serious. We'll pick up at the end of 11. Father Ruth Gotti is available if you wish to go to the question. We'll pick up at the end of 11. No. What was your question? You asked a question about man. Do you remember your question exactly? And I said it was answered in the latest letter to friends and benefactors. Do you remember what your question
yes.
was?
Yes. Paul to walk in John Paul II said that Jesus Christ reveals man.
That's it. That's it. That's it.
As he seems to be anthropocentric.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And okay, get a load of this. This is a book on John Paul II that's appeared recently in German, has been translated into French, and is coming out soon in English, by a German priest, Father Dellmann. And he's not a traditionalist, but he was upset by Assisi, and so he quietly sat down and studied what the Pope's writing and saying, and he was asking himself, where does Assisi come from? Father Dellmann says that John Paul II's fundamental error lies in holding that absolutely all men, consciously or unconsciously, are in a state of effective redemption by Jesus Christ. That is to say, all men are saved. The error arises directly from the new theology, which so glorifies man as to blur nature and grace. Human nature, says the new theology, is so wonderful that it is super. Therefore, whoever has human nature has supernature, in other words, grace. So all men are in a state of grace, and so all men, merely by being men, are saved. Quote, hell exists but it is empty, unquote, said von Balthasar. Hence, a brand new version of the church, of revelation, and of the faith. Faith, revelation, 7b, 8, the church, 23, 24, 25. It's all here. As for the church, if every man at every moment has grace merely by having human nature, then every man belongs in some way to the church. And so the supernatural church coincides with the natural mankind. Once more, the blurring of the supernatural and the natural. Secondly, since church and mankind differ then from one another only by their greater or lesser awareness of their being in Christ, the church being more aware of it than the run of mankind, then all that Christ revealed to man was the fullness of man. In other words, man's natural supernaturalness. However, this revelation of man by Christ to man is an exterior and secondary revelation, which is not strictly necessary, because all men are present to themselves. They have a natural self-awareness, and so they have an interior revelation coming before any additional revelation from outside, from which it follows that the various religions are none of them true or false, because all men have a valid self-awareness of which their religion is is the expression. Hence John Paul II's respect for all non-Catholic religions. You follow?
Is that now the way the Pope is talking?
Yeah.
But that's not true.
of course it isn't true. Of course it isn't.
There's no reason to
think so. You've got to be careful, Joseph, to think
that's what I thought now, you know, that because you've come down reading, but what still is quotation.
Don't believe what you find here, all right, because this is terrible. This modernism stuff is terrible. As I say, don't follow too closely. Larry?
if grace is in human nature, because human nature is the same as super nature,
right,
then there was no reason for Christ to come down.
You've got it.
Because the nature of man hasn't changed.
You've got it. All that Christ has done is to show to us the fullness of what is in us.
Including dying on the cross.
But it was not necessary.
That's correct. Not strictly necessary. It's just a bonus from God, because God is so good.
So this is in the way, if somebody reads that, is thinks this is a new religion, you know. I mean,
it's a new religion.
If you don't read it in connection with, that's what it is. It's good that I have the one here.
All right. it's simply horrific. It makes the hair stand up.
Who's going to publish this book in America?
The Angelus. Coming up soon. Finally, faith is equated in this system of ideas with man's awareness of his super state. Whether this was revealed to him through Christ or through some other source. Thus, all religions contain some revelation of God, because all men have an interior awareness. Therefore, all men have an awareness of God, which is expressed in their religion. Therefore, all religions are at least partly valid. Once again, from modernism, instantaneously follows ecumenism. Hence, thus all religions contain some revelation. Remember, that's what revelation is. The arrows are what is revelation. The arrows coming up from my gut to my head are revelation. All men have a valid... Hence the need for dialogue between these religions as the golden highway to religious peace, which is the most important part of universal peace, hence Assisi and John Paul II's continual travels. And he even talks to the voodoo. Even voodoo is a valid self-awareness and revelation. Yeah?
The seeds of the word.
The seeds of the word, that's right. Yes, that's it. Yes?
This legitimacy of our religion, does that include traditional
death? Ah!
No way.
What's the problem?
No way, because we exclude every other revelation than the ultra-phenomenal revelation. Therefore, we are denying their system. We are the only ones that deny their system. Therefore, we are the only ones that are not allowed. Yes?
In relation to this, we hear very often the term baptismal desire.
Yes.
How far are you to push that in relation to these things? Like, for instance, if you grow up in Islamic faith and you have an interior desire to know the Creator, is that surviving baptismal desire?
Okay, now well, the baptism of desire is another question. It really is another question, because the baptism of desire is a Catholic doctrine. Okay? The Fenians, the so-called Fenians, and I'm not using that term contemptuously, but I'm just using it as a ticket, right? The Fenians reject the baptism of desire, but it is, you know, it's in St. Thomas Aquinas, it's in several of the Church Fathers, then we can call it a Catholic doctrine. Therefore, it has nothing to do with modernism. It's a Catholic doctrine, it has nothing to do with modernism.
So, but they're using that to fight the
modernists use baptism of desire by blowing it wide open.
Well, that's right. That's my question. To what degree are they right?
What is right? What is right is that what is right is what common sense. It's common sense, for instance, that a person who let's I'll give you one case on the baptism of desire. An African in the middle of the jungle has been preparing 3 years for baptism. He's coming into the mission compound on the morning that he's going to be baptized, and just before the service starts, he has a heart attack and falls dead. Now, is that still going to go to heaven or not? What does common sense say?
It's going to heaven.
Common sense is going to heaven.
Yeah.
He's taken 3 years, he obviously believes, he's absolutely ready, totally disposed, and so on and so on and so on. Yeah, yeah. But the water has not yet hit his skin. Okay? Right. Common sense says he would go there. I've taken that particular case. Now the trouble is then, of course, that the modernists say, well, suppose he was only 2.5 years through his 3 years, would he still go to heaven? Suppose he was only 2 years through it. Suppose he was only 1.5 years. Suppose he was 1 year. Suppose he was... At what point are you going to say that he would or he wouldn't, you see? So that they will drive it right back to the very moment when the first moment when the missioner came around the village, they will say, if the baptism of desire. Then they will say, well, why can't you say he has the baptism of desire even before the missioner comes to the village? You follow?
Yeah.
So, right. Then take night, day turning into night, dusk. Right? The modernist behaves like somebody who says, is it night when it's pitch black? Of course it is. Is it night 1 minute before it's pitch black? Yes. Is it 2 minutes before it's pitch black? Yes. 3 minutes before it's pitch black? Yes. And he'd go back until, you know, he'll keep on stretching you, you follow, until you're going to finish up saying the day is night. He's going to move an hour back, little by little by little by little, and then you know, when it's full daylight, he says, well, that's night. You follow the argument, you follow what I'm saying? In other words, although it's difficult to fix exactly where the frontier is, nevertheless, the difference between day and night is absolutely clear. Day and night, day shades into night through dusk. Nevertheless, between day and night is an absolute difference, right? Between a soul baptized in the state of grace and a soul, a pagan soul in the middle of the jungle, there's a total difference. When the pagan soul, when the missioner arrives and the missioner begins teaching, he begins accepting, he's preparing for baptism, and he's waiting for baptism, he's right a few minutes before baptism, you've got a whole shading there. At what point would he be saved? God knows. God knows. We don't know. So two things are certain. One, there is a baptism of desire. Well, there are a few things certain. One, there is a baptism of desire. Where that baptism of desire kicks in, God only knows. Only God knows. Point three, but common sense says that it certainly kicks in 1 minute before he's due to go through the ceremony, right? Just to take that particular example. Point three, the modernists, the liberals, take that doctrine of the baptism of desire and they drive a cart and horses through it. And they say, 1 before, 1 month before, 1 year before, 3 years before, the mission doesn't even happen to have been there and they've all got the baptism of desire. You follow?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, one of the reasons they were like, anybody desiring good are in essence desiring baptism.
That's too broad.
So that's too broad. Yeah.
That's too broad. Surely too broad. That's like saying, you know, the beginning of dusk is night. No. It's not enough to desire good.
What about that one? What happened with our missionary? He stopped from Australia. That Japanese, he was in the hospital there a few years ago, and he. Six hours later he died, but he had everything. Now, what would the modernists say? Oh, he didn't have to do all that because he had the desire already for years.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, the desire for baptism is not the same thing exactly as the baptism of desire. It's a difficult doctrine because it's a dusk doctrine. It's a dawn or dusk doctrine. You're in a grey area, and grey areas can be fooled around with. And the reason, the thinking behind Father Feeney. Father Feeney's thinking is, away with dusk. I can't bear dusk. It's either night or it's day. Unfortunately, between night and day, there is a dusk.
Yeah.
And his mind says, I don't want dusk. The liberals are playing with dusk. I loathe liberals and we've got to stop the liberals. I'm abolishing dusk. That's Father Feeney, follow? It's understandable, but it's an exaggeration which doesn't correspond to reality. It's completely understandable. The instinct is right. The instinct is that the liberals are playing ducks and drakes with a grey area. And they're destroying the church by playing with a grey area. But the final conclusion, therefore there is no grey area, is wrong. Matthew.
Outside the church, there is no salvation.
Correct.
A person can go to heaven by grace of Catholic Church. If, right?
Yes.
On the other hand, the Second Vatican Council teaches that Holy Ghost can act through non-Catholic communities.
See, that's
no,
wrong.
No, this is not my question.
What's your question?
Well, let's assume that the person before his death was baptized by all Catholic priests who still keeps valid ordinations.
Yeah.
So how can I deal with it? The argument will be raised that, well, all Catholics have valid ordinations. This person was baptized. He went to heaven. So all Catholics community is in observation.
Oh, that's hard cases make bad law. But the church settled back in the 200s with the Donatist heresy, that the Donat heresy, you could call it. The church settled that a heretic minister can give valid baptism, right? But that doesn't prove that his heresy is true. It simply proves that there's something valid, and there can still remain certain things valid inside a heretical system. That's all that proves. But that person was not saved by the heretical system as heretical. He was saved by something still Catholic inside the heretical system. Let me give you an example. An American soldier in the Second World War goes into a brothel, okay, in Italy. Inside the Italian brothel, there's a picture of the Madonna up in the corner of the room. The GI is a Catholic. The GI comes into the brothel for the purpose of soldiers usually come into brothels, and then he sees the Madonna in the corner. He says, "Oh, I'm being a naughty boy," gets out. He was saved inside the brothel, but not by the brothel. He was saved by something Catholic inside the brothel. You follow?
Yes.
He was saved from sinning by whatever was still Catholic in the brothel. You can't say he went into the brothel and got saved from sin, although that's true. But but he went into the brothel and got saved by saying there was still Catholic inside the brothel. Therefore, the person who was baptized by a heretical minister with a valid baptism was saved not by the heresy, but by what was still valid inside the heretical system. Therefore, he wasn't saved, as the Vatican II suggests, by something false inside a system of falsehood. See, what that Vatican quote suggests is that falsehood saves, which is heretic, which is a blasphemy. Right? What is true is that people can be saved inside false systems by whatever is still true inside false systems. Because some systems are falser than others, because some systems, although false as a whole, still retain a certain part of truth. Look, you've got to distinguish. It's a slightly complicated distinction, but it's too complicated for some people. You've got to distinguish between... See, this is an unfortunate... is the Novus Ordo Catholic?
Well, you're not.
Hold on. Okay, now wait for it. Now this is... I distinguish. You see, all right. A Novus Ordo Catholic says he believes in God. Is it Catholic to believe in God?
Yeah.
Therefore, there's still something in a Novus Ordo Catholic which is Catholic. Now, we've got to distinguish. Firstly, you've got to distinguish the whole and the parts. That's the first distinction to make. Then you sub-distinguish the parts. The parts which are Catholic are parts which are non-Catholic, and the parts which are Catholic. For instance, belief in God is Catholic. Belief in Eucharistic ministers is non-Catholic. I mean, belief in girls in the sanctuary, for instance, is non-Catholic. Right? But a number of those men who believe in girls in the sanctuary do also still believe in God. Right, so, answer your question. 1, 2, 3. Is the Novus Ordo Catholic in its Catholic parts?
Yes.
You have to say yes. Is it Catholic in its non-Catholic parts?
No.
Is it Catholic as a whole? And this is where Reuben is after. Is it Catholic as a whole?
No.
That's, see, it isn't, distinguish between the whole and the parts. When somebody says the novice order is not Catholic, as a whole it's perfectly true, because in order to be Catholic you've got to be completely Catholic. But if you then go into the parts, you've got to distinguish. There are parts which are true and parts which are false. Right? So what the therefore the novice order or any other religion, Mohammedanism, Buddhism, as a whole they're false. In many of their parts they're false, but in some parts they may still be true. Now, what Vatican II suggested, if Vatican II had said somebody can be saved by the parts that are still Catholic inside a false system, that's true. That would be true. But if they say you can be saved by a false system, that's false. Or you can be saved by the false parts, that's also false. And so Vatican II said something that's ambiguous. If you take it in the sense, you can take it in the sense that they're saying, all that we meant was you can be saved by the Catholic parts in the false system. That's true. But the suggestion is you can be saved by the system as a whole, which is false. And that's absolutely false.
These three questions, could you repeat them again?
Well, the novice order, is the novice order Catholic as a whole? Answer, no. It suffices to have the least little part which is non-Catholic for the whole to be non-Catholic. Right? Do you remember the story of the do you remember the story of the curate? Any of you know the story of the curate? The curate is the number two in a parish. He's young and he's new and he's terrified stiff of the dreadful vicar who's an old wolf of a priest, right? And the young vicar is eating Sunday breakfast Sunday lunch with this terrifying priest, and they're eating boiled eggs. And the young curate's egg has gone bad. So the old wolf smells, you know, they made him, so he says, "What's your egg like?" "It's good in parts." See? But if the egg is bad in parts, it's bad as a whole. Right? But you see, the problem is, you can't take the novus ordo and say, because it's bad as a whole, therefore it's bad in all its parts. It's just not true. You can't say that. And if you say that it's bad in all its parts, you're going to say that nothing in it is Catholic. And then that's an exaggeration, it's a falsehood. Right? The instinct is to reject the whole, and the instinct is correct. But nevertheless, there are... And the instinct, the simple instinct is correct. Nevertheless, that simple instinct can lead you into trouble if it leads you to say that every single part inside it is not Catholic. That's like saying that every single novice order mass has to be invalid, which is not true. Yeah.
Bishop, would you say a word about the sacrament in the novice order?
They're getting more and more invalid all the time. They're getting more and more invalid all the time. That you can say. You see, the egg, just like an egg goes rotten from one part to the other part, just like an apple starts rotten in one part, and the other half is still good, and then the whole thing goes wrong. Just like a person who gets leprosy. Firstly, his foot or his hand, and then the whole thing gets leprosy. Similarly, the church catches the leprosy of heresy. Firstly, a part of it is heretical, then the whole thing is heretical. But there's a difference between when the leprosy has only got his foot and when it's got the whole body. There's a difference between saying that the novice ordo has got leprosy here, there, and there, but it hasn't got it here or there yet. It will get it, because the infection will spread. The novice ordo is catching disease all the time. It's getting worse and worse. It's getting more and more gangrene in all its parts and in all its members. But at this point in time, it's impossible to say already in all its members, all the time, there's nothing, absolutely nothing left Catholic in it. It's just not true. And it's not fair, and it will lead you into exaggerations, which will, if you make exaggerated statements, you'll destroy your credit. People won't believe you if you exaggerate.
For the modernism that